Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Tuesday. This is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. Gentlemen, it's great to see you.
You as well.
We had more football last night, good football to talk about. Other things on the big show this morning. Tom Brady is afraid of turnovers. Dak Prescott is not afraid of the Saints. And the Texans, as we just mentioned, certainly weren't afraid of the spotlight on Monday night. That's where we will start hosting the Texans and the Texans owning the Titans, thanks in part to Deshaun Watson. For Houston, it was their eighth straight win, first team in NFL history to start a season 0-3 and then reel off eight straight wins. For Watson, two touchdowns in the air. He ran one in as well. Here he is on how the team has turned this season around.
We just focus on us. We don't worry about the outside noise. We knew what this team was about, and you know, we just kind of started slow early on in the season, and we're just a couple plays away from, you know, being 3-0. But you know, it didn't fall our way, but you know, we corrected those mistakes and made sure that we stayed on top of our game and kept grinding. And you know, we just focused on that locker room. And everyone in that locker room made sure that we stayed focused. And each and every week, we took it 1 week at a time, one day at a time. And now we're sitting here 8-3 and have an opportunity to do something special. So we got to keep the momentum going and keep focusing on, you know, one day at a time, one practice at a time, one meeting at a time. And if we can do that, you know, I mean, the sky's the limit for us.
All right, CeCe, great win for the Texans. Yes, they are 8-3. They look to be in the driver's seat. All things look good right now. But when you look at this Texans team, do they seem as strong, as in control? Are you buying them as true contenders right now in the AFC?
I would buy them as true contenders. It's very, very rare you're going to be able to win the number of games that they have. Now, they they've had a unique opportunity with either backup quarterbacks, a short week, a colossal of things, but this is their most impressive win. And what you'd like to see is with them, how physical can this team be? We had question marks about J.J. Watt and Clowney. Would they be able to stay healthy throughout the year? Seems like that is going to be the case. J.J. Watt is probably him and Andrew Luck, as far as comeback player of the year, having phenomenal season. So if you tell me that, I've been like, okay, they're going to at least win eight games if their defense is competent, if their back end doesn't give up as many big plays. Now, Deshaun Watson, is he going to come back? How good is he going to be compared to last season? I had predicted that I thought he would come back a little bit. I still think he is an ultra star that we have in the NFL, but I thought there would be some correction. I'm worried about the loss of Will Fuller because I do believe that their inability to be a consistent build to get him deep and his complementary speed and route running of the DeAndre Hopkins on the other side, I thought that was going to be lethal. I didn't believe in the offensive line. I'm starting to get more confidence in them after the tremendous performance that they had last night. Lamar Miller, their running back, man, he's had a bizarre career. No one in the history of the league has had two runs, 97 yards in the history of this league. His eighth year in the league, but his consistency level has never been there.
Right.
Started off in Miami. He's never been able to get, ever since they paid him big money, going out and getting him from the Dolphins, bringing him there to Houston. So I do believe that they are a contender. I'm concerned about their lack of speed and a deep threat on the offensive end. But if J.J. Watt and the defense continues to play like that, they're going to be in a lot of games in an AFC that I believe is not that strong.
So last week we did our first Nick Makes a List. I had seven teams that are Super Bowl contenders. Mm-hmm. And even though the Texans had one of the six best records in football at the time, I didn't include them on that list. And that was anticipating they'd probably win at home against a Titans team that this year's been inconsistent at best. I still don't have them as contenders because of I am not sold on the offensive line. And the one thing you did not mention, and I think it will rear its head come playoff time, I am not sold on the coaching staff at all. The Texans right now, they're positioned quite well. Once the playoffs come around, they're a team that most likely, if they do hold on to win the division against the Colts, they could be facing a Chargers team. I trust the Chargers far more than I trust the Texans. If they win their division and they could the second wild card team, that's probably going to be the Colts. I trust the Colts and what they're doing more, not to mention, obviously, I trust the Patriots, the Steelers, and, of course, the Chiefs more. I think the Texans should get tremendous credit for not letting go of the rope after starting 0-3, for losing games the way they did, and then at the beginning of that winning streak, those were not overwhelming wins. They were back-to-back overtime wins and then a last-second win against Buffalo. But they, in this eight-game winning streak, they've had five games that I would call coin flip games. They've won all five coin flips. So their record, to me, is a little inflated. And even last night was one of the most bizarre football games I've ever seen. Yes. In that, I've never seen a quarterback go 22 of 23.
Like Mariota.
And his team is getting blown out the whole time. They're up 10-0, and from that moment forward, they're getting blown out. Mariota seemingly didn't make a mistake. I think Mariota is the second highest completion percentage in a game in NFL history. Second to what Philip Rivers did 2 days ago. Rivers' team won by 35. Mariota's team lost by 3 scores. That part was bizarre. I do think Watt is a great story. We're finally seeing Watt and Clowney, and Christian Covington's been a nice addition for them. Like, there are some good elements of this team. Demaryius Thomas got involved yesterday. But I think they will go into the playoffs as the team in the AFC least likely to make a playoff run.
We talk about who you trust against other teams in the AFC. Let's talk about specifically. A lot of us didn't think that we were going to see the Deshaun Watson we saw last year. If this team is going to go far, he's going to have to be able to lead this team. Mm-hmm. Take a deeper dive. How much do you trust this quarterback to be able to, A, withstand anything else that's going to be thrown at him and his offensive line to protect him, and then to move this team into the playoffs?
Yeah, I do trust him. I do like the way they've game-planned him, where he's a drop-back quarterback, but they do call some things to utilize his overall athleticism. I think he's careful enough with his body. He is very, very aggressive, not playing timid after the knee injury. And a lot of people still have to realize, you know, he injured his knee in practice. It's totally different when you get injured non-contact in practice compared to what the Philadelphia quarterback
happened to Carson Wentz.
With Carson Wentz. When you get smashed like that, the mental recovery is totally different. So what Deshaun is doing in year number two, we knew he couldn't reach that level on a consistent level, but we wanted to make sure that he was close enough to that level, and I think that I have seen signs of that. Will Fuller's absent, it hurts, because what they do is they try to be physical in the running game, which leads to play action pass, which leads to deep shots down the field, and that's something he was very special. I don't think you can recapture the speed and the connection that they had earlier in their career with Demaryius Thomas, who's more of a possession receiver.
And the numbers with Deshaun Watson and Will Fuller were out of this world. Last year they played 4 games together. Mm-hmm. They had 7 touchdowns. But Will Fuller had 7 touchdown catches in 4 games with Deshaun Watson. He was continuing not quite that trajectory, but on that trend this year until he got hurt. So it is a huge loss for them. My worry about Deshaun Watson is their inability to protect him. And yesterday he was dynamic with his legs. 9 carries, mm-hmm. 70 yards, a touchdown. But when he's getting hit in the pocket and he's also opening himself up to hits down the field running the football, even if he'd never been hurt, take the ACLs out of it, just as far as the ability to take NFL punishment. The Texans right now are paying the price for they signed Brock Osweiler to get rid of him. They had to trade away a second-round pick. They spent 2 first-round picks to get Deshaun Watson. They had a contract dispute with Dwayne Brown. They got rid of him. So because of all those, because they didn't have the draft picks and they got rid of their left tackle, right now their offensive line is, it's not even a work in progress. The progress will start this offseason, and Watson is too often running for his life for my taste as far as believing that I think he's an excellent player. I think he is at more risk than almost any quarterback in football right now because of the personnel around him.
I didn't have any different feeling about Russell Wilson when he was in his second year.
Really?
And even though Russell hadn't gotten hurt, Russell and him have a little different body type, but I do believe that Sean, he can take the pound. He is not Cam Newton, but, man, he's very athletic. I believe it helps out the coaching staff. It helps out this offense. It helps them. I don't mind a guy running in controlled situations. I do want them to improve their offensive line so at least on some of his drop-back stuff, he gets a cleaner look and the ability to be able to develop. It helps out. You can't always have free runners, and you can't always have my offense is off schedule. No, you can't do that to a young quarterback. So this is still a team that's trending on the way up. I believe they can get into the playoffs, but they are a year away. We talk about that with teams, and there's nothing wrong with that. They need a good, strong offseason. They need a good, strong draft, be able to fortify that offensive line to be able to give them some protection. But, you know, speed, you can't replace speed in the season. And I just believe that right there is really going to hurt them going forward.
And they have a winnable game coming up this weekend when they host the Cleveland Browns.
The rest of their games are winnable. They got a soft schedule the rest of the way.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, talk some Packers. Is Aaron Rodgers starting to realize that the end is near? Here from him next on First Things First. Moving on to Aaron Rodgers. He and the Packers lost Sunday night. Pack now 4-6-1 on the year. Rodgers joked after the game about having to both run the table and get help at this point. But the truth is, Green Bay is on the verge of missing the playoffs for the second straight season. After Sunday night's loss, Rodgers spoke about big picture situations with his career.
Obviously got a lot more gray in the beard than I did a few years ago. So I know that the football mortality catches up to everybody. And you never want to lose a season, especially when you felt great, you know, starting the season out about our prospects. But, we're going to battle the next 5 weeks and put ourselves in a position to be in the conversation. And hopefully it'll be enough. And like I've always said, you just got to get in. So we got to win these five, see what happens.
Aaron Rodgers waxing poetic about what's in front of him, what's to come, and where he's at right now. CC, what was your reaction to Rodgers' comments?
You know, sometimes I don't want to overreact because as a marquee player in the NFL, you have a certain number of obligation media things that you have to do. And sometimes you're just trying to get through it. Sometimes you're just trying to come up with some answers. You're trying to come up with something to give people a little something because you're the face of the franchise. But the truth of the matter is, you know, it doesn't really mean anything. Right now, their position is what it is. We know they missed the playoffs last year. Do we think we'd be sitting here talking, you know, after 11, 12 weeks, hey, man, Aaron Rodgers is going to miss the playoffs? That's the reality. With the quarterbacks and the teams we have in the NFC, if you think like you're a shoe-in, no matter who it is, Minnesota, Aaron Rodgers, like there are no shoe-ins. There's too many good teams, too many good quarterbacks in the NFC that, yes, this is the kind of thing that can happen to Aaron Rodgers. They're not that good. The Jordy Nelson, let's release Jordy Nelson, move on to younger receivers. Hey, it didn't work.
Well, that is, I think, one part of what was a path that has led Aaron Rodgers to what I would call a dispirited place, a place where he's discouraged and not only, I think, having less fun than he's had in recent times, but maybe has less hope for a season than he's had in any year where they've been healthy. Think about this, just this sequence of events. They get rid of the quarterback's coach. Mm-hmm. He's the only quarterback that matters on the roster. We learned that last year. They say, don't care that you like Alex Van Pelt. He's gone. Get rid of Jordy Nelson. We're going to go with these young receivers during the draft. Trade back in the draft. Now, I actually like that move long-term-wise, but whenever you trade back for future picks, that doesn't help you this season. During the preseason, he talks about how these young receivers, not on the same page, that they are not coming around as fast as he would have liked. Then he gets hurt. Then, to add insult to the injury, the team at the deadline is a seller instead of a buyer. Meanwhile, who are the rivals? Who are the Packers' real rivals? The
Vikings.
Bears. Vikings.
Okay, so the Vikings made the single most dramatic free agency move of any team this offseason, adding a quarterback. And the Bears
made the biggest in-season move.
So your two rivals are buyers trying to win, win, win. Mm-hmm. You get rid of your quarterback's coach. You get rid of your good friend wide receiver. You move back in the draft. And on top of all that, starting mid-first quarter week one, you're like, and I'm going to be playing hurt? and I can't miss games. I saw what happened last year when we missed games. And instead of Brett Hundley, now we have DeShone Kizer. Like, there's, I wouldn't blame him for having his spirits down a little bit right now, which is what I think we're seeing.
How much of this is Aaron Rodgers frustrated with his team? How much of it is with his coach? And how much of it is with where his career is and how much he's been able to accomplish in his career?
Now, I'm sure Aaron is a very prideful person. For those who are very close to him, there's only a few people. He's a rare, very different guy. It's been well talked about in the media as far as lack of relationship with his family. He doesn't have a lot of relationships in the NFL. So I'm sure with all the conversation with Tom Brady, and Tom Brady keeps going to Super Bowls and has won five of them, and Aaron has been in the league 14 years, he's seen a lot of that. Not only that, guys like Eli, he's won a couple. And Aaron's sitting there like, wow, look at my career. Is this the way I want my career to be? And I'm sure, man, there's all times, a lot of times in your career, you look in the mirror and you're like, wow, I wish I would have accomplished more. And the reality is, a quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, he might be the greatest thrower of the football ever, but his career will be less than if he doesn't get to and win another Super Bowl in this era where we have seen guys go to multiple Super Bowls. Big Ben, what he has done there in Pittsburgh. Eli, which we mentioned. Peyton, what he done. Man, Aaron Rodgers can't retire today and be like, you know something? I feel like I reached the end of my potential, because that wouldn't be true. But another side note, didn't Aaron Rodgers sign a contract extension?
He did.
Okay, so the bed that you laid in, you knew who was going to be ruffling the sheets. You knew who was going to be putting mints on your pillow. So if he wanted to, he had an opportunity to do a Tom Brady. You know something? I'm going to give you guys a hometown discount. But he didn't. I want to be the highest paid. He demanded that. They didn't even have to sign him to a contract. He forced them to sign them to a contract. So the flexibility that they have is limited because they have the highest paid player in the league. So when Aaron is complaining, I can only listen to him so much. Because I saw Tom Brady sacrifice, and I saw how that paid dividends for him not taking that money. So, Aaron, we are a collection of our decisions. So that's the organization that he wanted to stay there. That's how they're going to do business. He's not going to have an influence on how they make decisions. So complaining about those things when you knew those things were obvious before you signed that contract, I can only hear you so much.
You know what this year with Aaron Rodgers reminds me of? The end of LeBron's first stint in Cleveland, where the numbers were still there. That playoff series against the Celtics where LeBron quit is the narrative. His last stint in Cleveland before he went to Miami. He averaged 27-9-7. Final game as a Cav gave you 27-19-10. But if you watched those games, you knew this isn't the LeBron James we're used to. The numbers are there, but something is off. And what had happened to him was the previous year in the playoffs, he went 38-8-8 in a series against Orlando and they lost. The year before that, he went 45 points in a game 7 and they lost. And I look at Aaron Rodgers and he's got to be like, man, we're in the NFC Championship game up 12 and we lose. The next year, we can't get past a Cam Newton-led team. I'm better than Cam Newton. The next year, we can't get past a Matt Ryan-led team. I'm better than Matt Ryan. The next year, I'm hurt and our season falls apart. And this year, we're 5-6 because we can't win a road game. It feels to me like I don't want to say his spirit's been broken, but it's been damaged. And you're right. He can't do what LeBron did. He can't leave to go to Miami. He signed that extension. But what his hope is, I would imagine, is that the change for him is a head coach. The change for him was at the general manager last year and at the head coach this year, because we are not seeing the best of Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that is, at this point this season, some of the Packers' record has been that his play has been good, but not the exemplary level we're used to from him.
Just real quick. How much of this gets better once you change just the head coach? If Mike McCarthy goes, which is on the table right now at the end of the season, how much of this actually gets better?
I don't think the Packers get better. I don't think so. I think it's more difficult to build a coach, someone like Aaron Rodgers, than people realize. And the Bears and the Vikings, they're not going nowhere. Right. They're not going nowhere. Aaron Rodgers, he is married to Green Bay. And he's married to the decisions that front office makes. And I don't believe changing a head coach is going to bring some right immediate prosperity to him. The NFC is stacked with quarterbacks and franchises that can win a Super Bowl. And Aaron Rodgers is caught up in that.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, would the Jags be in the playoff hunt if they pulled the plug on Blake Bortles weeks ago and not yesterday? That's next on First Things First. Champion will be crowned as number 17. 17, Utah battles number 16, Washington. And then on Saturday, number 10, Ohio State, number 19, Northwestern go toe-to-toe for the Big Ten title. Coverage begins at 7 Eastern Friday and Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Obviously, major playoff implications in that Big Ten championship game. See if Ohio State, after some people thought they got snubbed last year, can sneak in this year. Might need a little help from Texas, though. Should be
number
a great
one
game.
In the basketball poll, though, so that's something.
An odd basketball poll, yes.
Time for us to go viral. The North Texas Mean Green finished the regular season 9-3, their best win percentage since 1978. So they were ready to celebrate. Check this out. Backup quarterback Cason Martin doing a dance called the whoa dance. Whoa.
What is this guy doing?
Nick, what is he doing?
I don't know. I assume it's probably from Fortnite. I'm not certain. Right there, it looked like they were mimicking a pulled hamstring. Yeah, I'm not familiar with any of these players. I know the school, North Texas. The Mean
I knew that dude was a backup. I knew the dude because dude like that. They sit around and dance. Dude should have been studying.
Studying.
He's got all dimensions.
Look at him.
Big, tall quarterback and everything. Entertaining.
I mean.
Okay, North Texas, get it in. All right.
You know what I always say? Miss me with that dance. Miss me with it.
Okay, Jenna.
How many times did y'all rehearse that before you missed it?
Literally none. Time for stories to
Rehearsal's
start the morning.
Good.
Marcus Mariota had a solid performance in last night's loss to Houston, completed 22 of his 23 passes, 303 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. On most night, that's a win. Last night, that was a loss. See, what'd you make of Mariota's night?
He's improving. It was a little overrated.
Inflated.
Because only three of those balls traveled more than 10 yards.
In the
air. So
yep.
All those completions and everything. Yes, they got drubbed.
They got
to be able to throw the ball down the field.
But this is a perfect encapsulation of 2018, where your quarterback can go 22 of 23.
Yeah, you can dink and dunk.
You can get blown out despite it. But for Mariota, listen. I think everyone's expectations of Mariota have been ratcheted down a number of degrees since where he was drafted. This was a good step in ratcheting those back up.
Moving on to Leonard Fournette. He was suspended one game for his altercation with Carl Lawson in the Jags-Bills game. Nick, did the NFL get this right?
I mean, you had to. Like, you can't have a guy who's not in the play, put his helmet on, run 60 yards to the fight, and then be the biggest participant in the fight. He wasn't running there as a peacemaker, and then tried to continue the fight into the tunnel. Like,
yes.
Leonard Fournette is always ready. He's an always ready all-star. He will go whenever you want, but this is not, I know you don't like fighting in sports, and he wasn't even a part of it. He didn't need to do this.
Now, what do you prove? It was stupid. Now he's out another game. This has been an awful season for them. He's been a disappointment for me in this year. Mm-hmm. I think he's averaging less than 4 yards in his career.
Yep.
No, Leonard Fournette. Just chill out. And because that escalated into the tunnel, that's probably the reason why he got suspended. You got fans, the danger
fans
of fans
right
getting
there.
Involved. Like,
that was bad.
All right, to the NBA now. Kevin Durant had an incredible night, scoring 49 points in a win over the Magic. Warriors have now won their last 3. Nick, what'd you make of Durant's night?
Listen, they needed every last bit of it. He was spectacular in the second half, 29 in the second half. They were down 17 at halftime. The Magic almost pulled off the rare go to L.A. and win, then go to Golden State and win.
Yeah,
Magic
they got the Lakers in their back pocket. They didn't sweat.
You're right.
The Lakers,
2-0 so in the Lakers this year.
Yeah.
You're right. But the Magic are better than people thought.
Yes.
Durant was awesome in the second half. Fourth quarter, 1-point game. I think there's a shot right there. Take that with you. There's a 4-point lead, 23 seconds left. He was great. They needed it.
Yeah, he was amazing last night. Klay was special, too, in the fourth. Tremendous comeback by them. Probably the best performance just with Klay and Durant on that roster because they've really struggled without Draymond, and we know they've struggled without Steph.
They could have lost their last two. Klay hit a game winner over the weekend, then this, 2 good wins.
Finally, call it a wasted effort. James Harden had 54 points, and his backcourt mate Eric Gordon had 36 last night. You add those together, that's 90 points, and it still wasn't enough as the Rockets fell to the Wizards 135-131 in overtime. See, are you worried about this Rockets team yet?
Of course. You should be. I mean, they came out of a little lull that they were in, and they played I think, 4 or 5 games where they started looking like Houston of last year. But, man, that's a distant memory, man. We need to pass that on. The best record in the NBA last year, losing in 7 games with Chris Paul having a bad hamstring. This team is not the same. They don't play the same. They don't have the same firepower. And on the defensive end, I mean, they are only a shell of that team last year. So, yes, there should be concern with the West, with the way the numbers come out. Like, you don't want to be a 6th seed, a 5th seed in the West. Like, so as we start to get to the new year, the season's going to become very, very important, the regular season, because of them getting off to the slow start.
And these, it seemed like they had righted the ship to a degree.
Yes.
Like, you could understand, okay, part of the reason they were struggling was they had the suspension after the fight with the Lakers, and you had some lingering injuries. And it seemed like they had got it together. And then they lose an overtime game to Detroit. They lose to Cleveland, which is unacceptable in any circumstances. And then the Wizards, who were ripping each other apart at the seams, you get 54 from Harden. Eric Gordon is one of his best games in 2 years, and you can't beat the Wizards because you play no defense. Like, this is where they, to C's point earlier, it seems like they missed some of those wing defenders. Obviously, now they might get Trevor Ariza back at some point this year if he gets bought out by Phoenix. Like, maybe that's part of the plan, but they give up 135.
Yeah, and when they don't have Chris Paul, their margin of error is nothing. You know, last year, because of their bench and because they had such other support on the offensive end, now without Chris Paul didn't play last night. So now their chances of being able to win NBA games on a regular are very slim.
Listen, see, last year they were 2nd in offense, 6th in defense. This year, they're 11th in offense and 20th in defense. Like, I mean, that's how you go from. They had a historic – the only reason they were 2nd is because Golden State nipped them at the end. They also finished top 5 all-time NBA history in offense. Now they have an above-average offense and a below-average defense. That's how you get a slightly below-average record.
Quickly, any confidence they can turn this around?
Well, I mean, I think they'll get better, and they obviously need to get healthier.
But nowhere near where they were last year.
No.
I don't think they can make it to the Western semifinals.
Wow.
No. I won't go that far yet.
Yeah,
I think they still went around in the playoffs.
Yeah,
I think it's too early to say any of that yet. See.
All right, we'll talk about more about that.
Study his little analytics book. Oh,
back to football, the Jaguars. Jags finally pulled the plug on the Blake Bortles era in Jacksonville, at least for now. Head coach Doug Marrone said it wasn't a knee-jerk reaction. You think? This happening just hours after the Jags fired their offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. Cody Kessler will now start under center for the Jaguars. After playing in the AFC Championship game last season, the Jags are 3-8. They've lost 7 in a row, as spicy mouth Jalen Ramsey would say, that's trash. All right, Nick, did the Jags wait a little too long to bench Blake Bortles?
Well, if you mean did they wait too long into this season, no. I don't even know that they should have benched him now. I don't know what going to Cody Kessler gets you. Now, did they stick with him too long in their franchise? Absolutely. Was it ridiculous to try for the last 2 off seasons to build a team around Blake Bortles? Yes. Was the extension absurd? Of course. Was passing on Teddy Bridgewater? I'll go a step further. How about a year ago, when you have the 4th pick of the draft, and you say, because we have Blake Bortles, we need a great running game. We're going to overdraft Leonard Fournette with Mahomes and Watson on the board. That's where you made this bet. They made this bet, and now they're going to lie in this bed. Tom Coughlin's got to own a lot of this. The coaching staff that's been making excuses for him has to own a lot of this. Poor Nathaniel Hackett gets fired. Why? For no reason, just because they had to have a scapegoat. Blake Bortles is who Blake Bortles is. I mean, this is what everyone knew he was. He's playing to his career averages this year. The defense just isn't extraordinary, and so now they're 3-8.
Yeah, I think the Jags were delusional. When you draft a guy as high as they drafted him out of UCF 5 years ago, you think that you're going to make this kid into a quarterback. Big, strong, can throw the football, good athlete. A lot like Blaine Gabbert, other guys that we have seen. But when they get to the NFL, you can't make these guys into starters. These guys are not franchise quarterbacks. So regardless of Jacksonville, their fans, regardless of what they try to say, they have made a number of mistakes. And the big bet that they made on Blake Bortles, even after the success they had in last year's playoff, doubling down, keeping him and bringing him back, that was a huge mistake. He is never going to be. And I said this about another guy before. If throwing the football is important, he's never going to be good at playing in the NFL. He's not accurate enough. He doesn't have anticipation. And he's been 5 years as a starter. Man, that's a lifetime in the NFL with a good supporting cast, a great defense. No, it's – go ahead.
Okay, so some will say, well, he did somehow, some way – get them to the AFC Championship game last year.
He didn't get
right,
them.
Right, that's right.
He was riding the bus that ended up there.
Okay, so now you look at this year. Is he the reason, and
no.
he alone, that they're 3-8 this
listen,
year?
Listen, Blake Bortles, for his career, has an 81 quarterback rating. This year has an 81 quarterback rating. 1.4-1 touchdown interception ratio for his career. This year, the exact same. Completion percentage, the exact same. He's the same guy he's always been. The difference is this, and this is why their plan was so absurd. Because I could see it. People could see it. They were irrationally healthy last year. Of their top 12 defensive players, all so 12, 6, 192 available games, they played in 188. They were perfect health on defense. A.J. Bouye played the year of his career. Calais Campbell was a star. He's still a very good player. Jalen Ramsey played as well as you can play. The defense regresses. We see this in the NFL all the time. The top offenses stay consistent typically year after year because it's about the coordinator and the mm-hmm. quarterback. Defenses, there's so much luck involved. Did we recover more fumbles? Did we get more tip passes? You couldn't anticipate they were going to have a historically great defense again. They did. And the money they saved by giving Bortles the extension, they didn't pocket it. They spent it on Dante Moncrief. Like, so they didn't even get any salary cap benefit from extending Blake Bortles.
They made a number of mistakes, and it started at halftime of the game in New England where they decided to take a knee. All right? So this is not just one thing. Oh, Blake had a bad game. He had a bad half. Oh, this organization. No, this organization with that head coach, they decided to take that knee at New England. They had New England on skates. They had New England scared. They had New England on the run. And they decided to get very, very conservative. And that's the same thing that they did. They had Allen Hurns. You have to either bring back him or Robinson in some capacity. Dante Moncrief is no replacement. What is he, a number three? So you went into the season, forget the quarterback. Your number one receiver was Dante Moncrief. No tight end. Now, they had spent a lot of money on their offensive line. So in that offensive line, you can't play that way. You can't have all your money spent on your offensive line. Ask the Dallas Cowboys about that. They're still absent of a playmaker. So that model in Dallas, in Jacksonville, it does not work with a great defense. We are in a new era. You got to have a quarterback, and you got to have some weapons to be able to move the ball down the field and to be able to score some points. So they made a number of mistakes, and it started for me when they started to take that knee and get very, very conservative. Blake Bortles is not a franchise quarterback.
Well, they paid Blake Bortles to be their franchise quarterback. What happens to him now? Where does the organization turn? Because the answer is not Cody Kessler.
So that's the thing is they signed him to a 3-year extension instead of picking up the 5th-year option. And so next year, even if he's not on the team, he counts $17 million against their cap. The year after that, they can move on from him, but still a $5 million cap hit. This is Tom Coughlin did a wonderful job with the New York Giants, and that is on his football resume. But what he's done here is total mismanagement, and it is being stuck in an era of football that does not exist. The Jags' plan, they had a fork-in-the-road moment. The 4th pick of the draft a year ago, where they could have still loaded up on all those defensive players. They could have done what we're seeing so many of the good teams do, have a great team surrounding a young quarterback. That's what the Chiefs' plan is with a guy the Jags could have drafted. That's what the Texans' plan is with a guy the Jags could have drafted. Instead, they overdrafted a running back. Why? Because if Blake Bortles is
our
quarterback,
guy, we're going to get a running game.
They started every question with the answer already there. Bortles has to be there. And now you get what you deserve. And one other thing, Chris and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that last year the owner okayed them trying out and bringing in Cap. And it was vetoed by team management. It was vetoed by Tom Coughlin. Right now they're going with Cody Kessler. I don't know the Cap would have been. I don't know how successful he would have been there. But he wouldn't be this. And they wouldn't be 3-8. And they wouldn't be all of a sudden a team that looks to have no plan moving forward.
And I wouldn't get rid of most of the defensive players. Jalen's had a good year. He's given up a few plays. give up a few more plays than he had last year, but Jalen's played some good football. But I would put a tighter rein about what he's going to say and the temperament that they're going to have, because they started having problems internally on the team where they were fighting amongst each other. And then when they decided to give up on Dante Fowler, the defensive end, who was a high draft pick, and they kept encouraging that they were going to stay with Blake Bortles, that causes the team to have a rift. Well, you give up on this guy and you stay with this guy who's big bad, as Jalen would say. So they got a number of things internally that Tom Coughlin's going to have to solve. And, man, these last six games, they're important. Because if Doug Marrone puts that same raggedy, stinking outfit that he put out there in Buffalo, he's going to get fired. Yeah. It's not like he's got some great resume and everything. Like, Tom Coughlin needs to look at it from top to bottom. And Doug Marrone, his head would be potentially on the cutting block if they don't finish the season strong.
You go 3-1 to 3-8, everybody's job's in jeopardy. Now, they just don't have a backup plan at quarterback, because the backup plan's Cody Kessler. And so he might actually make Blake Bortles look good. But this is, listen, they made the bed, they bought the sheets, they had the fancy throw pillows like you. Now they got to go lie in this bed. They've been making it for a couple years.
Well, it's pissy because Kessler's 8-0 in his career. So, all right? Get used to that. That pissy smell.
0-8 is also coming up. Is Tom Brady making a mistake trying too hard to avoid turnovers? Next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First. Coach Mangini is with us. Hey, Coach.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good
morning.
Good to see you.
Everything good?
Everything is fantastic.
Great to have you here this morning. Let's talk some Tom Brady, whose mantra in recent years.
Eric Mangini, First Things First.
Whose mantra, like mine, has been 40 is the new 20. Still a solid starter at age 41, but not exactly in the MVP race. 15th in touchdowns, 14th in yards per game. Not exactly GOAT-esque. Coming off a win over the Jets, which some would say should have been easier than it was, Brady spoke about adjusting his game in this relatively old age.
Maybe part of my problem as I've gotten older is, you know, I want to make so few mistakes. You know, maybe there's not as much aggressiveness as I would like, because, you know, with aggressiveness comes a little more risk. And, you know, we have like a 95% chance of winning when we don't turn the ball over, you know, and I think that's always in the back of my mind. So, you know, being a little less fearful with the ball, a little more aggressive, you know, I thought we did a better job of that yesterday. And, you know, hopefully we can keep that going.
Both Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady after the games this weekend talking about where they are in the grand scheme of their football careers. What was your reaction to what Aaron Rodgers said?
Tom Brady had to
also
say.
Also Tom Brady.
Well, the difference is Tom Brady won. but the message is, to me, I understand he's getting a little bit introspective on it and where his numbers are versus where they've been. But the key stat there is they have a 95% chance of winning if you don't turn the ball over. And most games in the NFL are lost. They're not won. Games are lost because of somebody's mistake. And one of the things that Tom's always done well, the organization has done well, is not have unforced errors. And when you put yourself in that situation and just wait for the other team to make a mistake, and New England does a great job of then capitalizing on other people's mistakes, you're going to win a ton of games. Now, could he take more chances? Maybe, but how much better than 95% chance of winning do you want to get? And is it worth it to get, you know, some marginal gains?
Coach, I remember like in the late 90s, and Brian Billick, I got to give Brian credit. And I'm not going to say analytics, but he was one of the smarter coaches I was ever involved with. And as the game started to evolve, he started to reveal numbers and stuff to us. A lot like Tom Brady. And I had never been exposed to that type of information on a regular basis as far as winning and losing games. What do you have to do and what happens more often when you win and what happens more often when you lose? And it's totally outside of sacks, you know, and yards and how many times you rush the ball. But it's about turning the football over. There is nothing more as far as telling the game in the NFL, then who won the turnover margin?
Yep.
And for Tom Brady, even at this age, to concentrate on that and to know that, to me, it's one of the brilliant things about him, that he can still understand, I don't need to take more chances. I need to take advantage of now this game of throwing the ball and the talent and the skills that I have around me. So I understand that. When you're presented with this information, what is the most calculated risk? What's the best way of going about doing my job? I had to change when Brian was able to expose this information. We had to change as an organization when he began exposing this information to us. And you have to play the numbers.
Yeah.
It's a numbers game. Even though it's a sport, it's a numbers game. So I have a lot of respect for Tom and how tuned in he is to, man, this is what it takes to win. And there's nothing more important than winning.
And you're 100% right that year after year, if you just look at the standings next to the year-end plus minus turnover margin, they're nearly identical. They like in yards, defense leaders, none of those are match up like that does. But we're this is one of the great benefits, though, of being Tom Brady. So we did look up the numbers. When Brady doesn't have a turnover, they win 89% of their games. So he said when we as a team. But when just Brady doesn't have a turnover, they are 111-14. So he knows the biggest, if I play a clean game, 9 out of 10 times we win.
And no one is touching the ball more than him. He's touching the ball 65 times a game.
And we know.
So he should have that to be the most important thing because he's touching it the most.
But when I say, and everyone at this table believes Tom Brady is the GOAT of NFL quarterbacks. But Coach maybe hasn't seen enough yet, but I imagine you would call Brady the GOAT.
Getting closer. I mean, it's either him or Mahomes.
Okay. But this is one of the benefits Brady has that the other great quarterbacks don't have the same degree. The Pats win 89% of the time when Brady doesn't turn the ball over. The Packers win 75% of the time when Rodgers doesn't turn the ball over. They're 5-6. He's 20 touchdowns, one interception on the year. There aren't really hardly any yeah buts about Tom Brady. But when people do the Brady versus Belichick system or quarterback, that discussion, this would be a point in the Patriots' favor rather than Brady's, which is because they are so buttoned up, because they're so well coached, because they don't lose games, as if his margin of error is greater and what what he needs to do on a week in, week out basis is lesser. Now, he has shown in the biggest moments he raises his game higher than anybody's.
Well,
but
I would argue that because I know guys in that system. Tom Brady conducts meetings himself. Tom Brady has emphasized what Bill Belichick is trying to do. So I have seen Tom. Tom is just not sitting back saying, what do I do today, Bill?
Sure.
No, Tom has taken an aggressive approach. Tom teaches the offense, teaches the principles and the coaching points as well as this comes from guys that are in the room. So Tom's input in what they're doing on the offensive end is significantly greater than anything Aaron Rodgers or I've heard about Aaron Rodgers coming out of Green Bay, Coach.
Okay, so this might not be the most popular question, but it's...
Go ahead.
Tom Brady hasn't been as sharp as he's been in years past. Is there a correlation between him doing what we talked about, holding onto the ball more, trying not to turn the ball over, and the fact that he hasn't been that sharp, this hasn't been his best year?
Well, I think one of the things that makes you take more risk is trust. And trust in the people that are around you.
Yes.
And this group is a new group. You bring in Josh Gordon, there has to be a level of trust that's built up.
Nick, how many wide receivers have they worked out in New England since the spring?
Forget worked out. Signed and cut, I think it's 33.
Right, so there's 33. He's got a new left tackle. The old left tackle is the highest paid guy in the league at his position. The new left tackle makes $436,000.
We've talked about things like this in the past with Tom Brady.
Because that's what we take for granted. So with him saying maybe I could take more risks, when you're dealing with a rookie running back, a Gronkowski
had in and out of lineup who missed most of training camp, Sony Michel. Camp,
the guys that he has a lot of trust with haven't been there on a consistent basis. So for him, I'm sure it's a function of, I know if I play clean, we've got a great chance of winning. And then if I'm going to take chances, I want to take chances when those guys prove to me that chance is worth taking.
And the other thing that we saw this year was the first 7 games of the year, Tom Brady couldn't play a clean game. First 7 games of the year, he had a turnover in every single game. Now, they went 5-2 despite that. And then since then, he has been more conservative, and he hasn't been putting up gaudy numbers. I think it's a combination of what Coach said, and it is, Of course Tom Brady is a lesser player today than he was 3 years ago or 5 years ago. Like, he can be fending off Father Time better than anyone in the history of the sport, but that doesn't mean Father Time's not making any gains whatsoever. So the combination of having change in his left tackle for just the second time or third time in his entire career, the turnover at wide receiver, and that he's 41, all of those things lead to the stat you mentioned, 14th in this, 15th in that.
Yeah, I saw Tom Brady in the fourth quarter at the Super Bowl. And now that was just in February. So to me, the greatest thing that's changed is overall the personnel around him. And the reason why it's trust, Tom Brady don't have the trust. These guys aren't great. Josh Gordon got traded by the Browns after not showing up. Gromskin out of the lineup. Edelman was suspended.
Right.
Like, the running back, their most consistent offensive weapon, he's been in and out of the lineup. So that's part of Tom Brady's problem. I haven't seen the age. After what he did last year, and now he disproved people last year, right now, to me, it's about the personnel that they put around him and the lack of trust of that.
And with all those issues that we're talking about, we're just saying his numbers are a little bit down. If this was some other marquee quarterback, the sky would be falling. We'd need to get more free. I mean, whatever. Whatever.
Get him some help.
Yeah, he's got to get help. He's got to get help. For him, it's like, oh, his numbers are a little down.
Okay. All right, Coach, stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up, there's a prize at the end of the commercial break. Is it time to consider Deshaun Watson and the Texans as contenders? That's next up. Back here with Coach Mangini, we're talking Monday Night Football. Texans hosting the Titans. Texans beating the Titans, thanks in part to Deshaun Watson. For Houston, it was their eighth straight win. First time in NFL history, team started a season 0-3 and then reeled off eight straight wins. For Watson, two touchdowns in the air, one on the ground. Here he is on his team's chances now moving forward.
We just focus on us. We don't worry about the outside noise. We knew what this team was about. And, you know, we just kind of started slow early on in the season. And we're just a couple plays away from, you know, being 3-0. But, you know, it didn't fall our way, but, you know, we corrected those mistakes and made sure that we stayed on top of our game and kept grinding. And, you know, we just focused on that locker room. And everyone in that locker room made sure that we stayed focused. And each and every week, we took it 1 week at a time, one day at a time. And now we're sitting here 8-3 and have an opportunity to do something special. So we got to keep the momentum going and keep focusing on, you know, one day at a time, one practice at a time, one meeting at a time. And if we can do that, you know, I mean, the sky's the limit for us.
All right, Coach, so here you have the Texans sitting at 8-3. Are there a ton of people out there that are thinking, well, I'm nervous, I'm afraid to play this Texans team? It doesn't feel like they are as intimidating a team as their record seems to be. Are they true contenders in the AFC right now?
Yeah, they're absolutely true contenders. And we talked about this early in the year, where you go into the season with who you want to be, and then you realize who you need to be. And I think that's what happened with these guys. And if you remember, Deshaun Watson only played six games last year. So similar to San Francisco and Garoppolo, they were learning about Deshaun Watson, but they didn't really know who he was. And then they go into the offseason, you put together your plan of this is what we think Deshaun will do really well. And he's radically different than what they typically would have in this offensive system in terms of his skill set. So they had to adjust to that. Offensively, they had to figure out how to utilize the strengths that he had the best way while also incorporating the things that they wanted to run offensively, and they've done a good job with that. And then you look at it defensively, you know, Romeo Crennel comes back in as the defensive coordinator. Mike Vrabel had the one-year stint there. Romeo went kind of to a more of a front office role. He comes back. I think that's had a really positive impact. You had Brad Seeley, the special teams coach. I think that's had a really positive impact. He was a guy that we were with in New England, and I think he's one of the best in the league. So all those things combined and that process of, all right, who do we need to be? They started to figure that out, and now I love what he's saying in the press conference. One meeting, one practice, one day, one game. It's not, oh, we're going to make the playoffs, or, you know, grabbing Nick's chart and saying, well, if we beat these three guys and New England falls to this team, that's not their they have the right mindset, which is encouraging too.
And that's the right mindset, even if they were 4-5, even if they were 4-7, because in this league, you have to be able to try to be consistent week in and week out. Coach Mangini makes a good point. we sometimes just fall into in love with the teams that have the big numbers and everything or get off to the fast start. Ultimately, it's what kind of football team are they after Thanksgiving? Who they were in September, that really doesn't matter that much. And who's going to get better coming down the stretch? And I think Coach Mangini, don't want to speak for him because yesterday I did that and I was wrong, but I think Coach Mangini feels like this is a team that's trending in the right way as far as trying to identify what can they do compared to what we want to do. In the offseason, everybody wants to do, man, we're going to run big plays, want to be explosive, want to get after the quarterback, create turnovers. But ultimately, you see, hey, this is who I got. What can I do? So I think that he has a great deal of respect for who they have turned into. Now, if they can continue to evolve, to continue to protect their quarterback, how are they going to get big plays out of that offense? And Demaryius Thomas, does he continue to build on what he's done in the last 4 weeks? Yes, this is the type of team I don't want to face Clowney and J.J. Watt in the playoffs. So when you start talking about is the team a contender, who don't I want to play? And this is a team with their front that I wouldn't want to play.
Well, so I think that's a great way to put it. And of the teams right now that look like they are playoff teams in the AFC, of those six teams, if I have to pick who I don't want to play, that would mean by definition of the six, there's the one I would most want to play, and that is the Houston Texans. So in my eyes, does that make them not a contender? Yeah, I think that makes them not a contender. I give them tremendous credit. JJ, I thought, and I think a lot of people thought, his career was headed in a direction of derailed by injury. And he is now 90% of what he was at the peak of his powers, which was one of the best four-year stretches in the history of the league at that position. They didn't have a first or second round pick this year. They made the most of their third round pick, drafting Justin Reed, who could have been a first round talent. He's been awesome for them. Kiki QT as a slot wide receiver has been very good for them. I'll give them a lot of credit, and Deshaun looks as good as a lot of us thought he was going to look coming out of Clemson. But I do not trust their coach. I do not trust their offensive line. And if Deshaun's going to say we could have won those three early in the year, then I can say, well, the two wins prior to last night, you're up two with the other team kicking a field goal at the gun to win. The first three games of this winning streak were overtime, overtime, and a Nate Peterman pick six and a tie game with 2 minutes left. So if he's going to say that we could be better than 8-3, sure. They also easily could be 5-6. And so it is tremendous credit to turn 0-3 into 8-3. But of the teams that I think are going to make the playoffs in the AFC, this would be the one that if I have to play in the first round, they're the team I want to play.
You'd rather play Baltimore?
No, I think the Colts and Chargers,
right?
Texans are the bottom three. Chiefs, Patriots, Steelers are the top three. Of those six, with the way the Colts are going and Luck is going, the way the Chargers have been all year, and we know who the Chiefs, Patriots, and Texans are, this is the team. You're right. If Baltimore gets in, I'd rather play Baltimore.
I mean, because I'm just looking at the teams that qualify right now.
Right now. The Colts and Baltimore are tied at 6-5. I'm putting the Colts above Baltimore, but sure, I would have them above Baltimore. I don't think Baltimore's going to get there.
But that was my point that I made earlier, is when you talk about teams that you trust and you don't trust, yes, they've won 8 in a row, but I don't trust that they're going to go out there and keep putting it together in a consistent way because there have been so many close games, so many flip of a coin plays on defense.
Yeah, I can understand that. And anyone who's looked at the games, and if you look at them and you try to be objective, yes, you would be concerned. Yeah, they have played in some very tight games. Were they gifted several games? Yes, but it's where you're playing right now and based on winning 8 games in a row. I played 16 years in this league. I never won no 8 games, so I'm not going to sit here and poo-poo winning 8 games. I don't care who you're playing against. What? Sit there and do it.
Well, you did. You're 15 in 1 year. You guys won 8 in a row.
No, we did.
You had to.
We won 7.
And then 8. You had to.
And then 8. Yeah, okay. But that's the thing. I did it one time.
Sure.
And, I mean, we had a great season. I haven't seen the cases. Look it up. We have Dusty.
Not a lot of teams
in the history of this league,
not a lot
winning 8 games, man, because everyone's got talent.
No.
And I remember our first year winning the Super Bowl, playing Buffalo, and it's up there in overtime. David Patton fumbles, gets knocked out, fumbles. They recover the ball. It looks like we're going to lose the game. But David Patton's head was on the sideline, and the ball was touching his foot. So the ball was out of bounds. We kept the ball. We go down, score, we win the game. So sometimes the football gods shine on you, and you get those things, those moments where maybe you shouldn't have won the game, but you do. And what they have is they are under the radar, and people are saying, well, they're not that good. But that plays to their advantage because they don't have to deal with all the external stuff that the Chiefs are dealing with and San Diego's dealing with and the pressure of expectations. They can just focus on the next thing ahead of them. It's a great spot to be in.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.